Marilyn Coulter with the Fisher Body Historical Team. It's September 1st, 2005 at 1 o'clock, interviewing Miss Betty McNary. Betty, would you like to...
I'm better known as Betty. My name, see, on the birth certificate is Kathleen, but when I became a citizen here, I wanted to ask if I, because I went through school as Betty, a nickname. Somebody in the family didn't like the name of Kathleen. And so they nicknamed me Betty, went through school and everything as Betty. So when I became a citizen in this country, I was born in Toronto, Canada, I asked him if I could add the name of Betty because I was better known as Betty. And they said yes. So I went by Kathleen, and everything legal now is at Kathleen Betty. I signed Kathleen Betty. So it won't get messed up.
Well, Kathleen Betty McNair.
Right. You can call me Betty. It's plain.
All right, that's fine. But I'll call you Betty. So, Betty, will you spell your name for me, please, so they have it
McNary,
correct?
McNary, M-C-N-A-R-Y.
Okay. And you hired in when?
I hired in May of, the second time, the May of 48.
Yeah, 48. And what department did you hire in?
Cut and sew.
Cut and sew. And that was considered what department?
They always called it cut and sew.
Oh, okay. Was that what later became known as the cushion room?
Well, then the cushion room was the other end of it.
Okay.
It was a division by it. So we made the stuff for the cushion room to finish up the cushions. We made the coverings. We sold the coverings that went on the cushions. See.
So now, and you hired in 1948.
Mm-hmm.
So now, what year did you hire in prior to that?
I hired in 46. And worked 1 year and was off for a year. And then I needed the job really bad, and so I wondered if I could get back in. I had to leave the first time because of babysitting problems. I had young children, and I had to have a reliable babysitter because you can't just leave kids on their own. They're only 6, 8, and 10. And I lived in the country, and it's hard to get someone to come out in the country to take care of the kids. So I had to quit. And then there was a neighbor lady that finally offered to take care of him. So following year, I said, gee, I wish I could get back in. You know, I'd go to work at the fair because I felt more comfortable. I had had a year's experience there. And one of my friends, her name was Lisa Muzzy. She retired from Fisher, too. She talked to Mr. Drinkwater, and he was the superintendent of the cushion room and the sewing department. So anyways, he said, yeah, have her come in. So I came in, and of course they hired me again, and I stayed there for my 30 years.
So you worked in the in the cut and sew for your entire 30?
That went out. That went out in 58, the cut and sew. See, went out. They moved to Grand Rapids, cut and sew did.
Mm-hmm.
And then they called us back. And I came back into the cushion room assembly. And, of course, the people that were called back, naturally, we were going to be replacing people. So we weren't accepted very readily, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand. So if you couldn't do the job, that was very high production. You were out 3 days and then you're out. So I don't know how many people washed out, but I was one of them. And... But that was all right because they called me back a little while later, and then I came back in. I went into paint department,
mm-hmm.
and I went there the rest of my time.
So now, what was it like for a woman coming into the plant and back in 1946, 48? What was that like to be a woman working in a factory back then?
I worked with a lot of women, though. I went into a department where there was women. The men... Men were the stock people. They picked up the materials that we had sewn together and moved it on to the next stage of the process of fixing this cushion or the seat back or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I was women, so it was comfortable.
Okay. So were there women working in other parts of the plant or just in the cut and sew room?
There were some women, but not as many. I didn't get into the rest of the plant very much, but there wasn't as many women as there is today, which... Of course, it came to where we could work the same amount of hours, get the same rate of pay for the same job in time, you know, through the union. So that really helped us, you know.
So initially when you worked in, women got paid less than men working here?
Oh, yes. Because it wasn't men that were sewing on the sewing machines. Ah. We didn't have men. They just had foremen as men.
So was it a large difference in pay between what the men made and what the women made in the sewing?
As far as I understand, it was, but...
Do you recall how much you made?
I don't know how much I made. The best of my knowledge, I think when I started, the very first time, I think was... Well, I don't know why 97 cents come into my mind, but I think it was a dollar something. It may have been $1.79.
That was a lot of money back in 1948.
That was in 48 when I think it was $1.70, because they had a contract, I guess, in between or something. I don't know what happened, but and then, of course, after you worked 3 months for a little less money, but if you got your seniority, like 3 months, you got a 10-cent raise. Apparently, and then you stayed on. So that was the way it worked at that time. I don't know how it does now.
So can you tell me what were some of your fondest memories about or what it was like to work? How was the work?
The work was hard. It was hard. I mean, you had to make production. I mean, if you didn't, they were on you to make it. And if you didn't do a good job, they had women coming around and inspect. They'd pick up a piece of your work that was on the floor in front of you and check it up. You know, if you were doing a good job, they naturally marked it up. And we got called to the office. I never did get called. I was very fortunate. I was blessed. But I don't know as I always made production, but I tried to do a good job. Mm-hmm. Because I was so thrilled to have that job and make that kind of money to support my family. Mm-hmm. That I just did the best I could all the way to the day I retired. I did the best I knew how. I never felt like I had to back up for my paycheck. Mm-hmm. Never.
No, that's kind of. Now you said now at that time were you married or were you?
Oh yeah, I was married, but so my husband was not a provider. He had an illness, but he was not a provider.
Oh, so you had to do
out. I had to get out and work.
So, what were some of the other conditions like as far as for women's facilities and things like that?
I'll be honest with you, I was blessed, so I didn't complain. I could get along fine. Mm-hmm. It was a community bathroom, but they had private toilets. I mean, the toilets, but there was a big bowl around where you washed your hands, and like 12 people, I think, could get around this big bowl, and you'd step on a lever, and the water come out all the way around, and you washed your hands there.
It's still like that,
and we had toilets with doors mm-hmm. and private, mm-hmm. you know. And then, of course, it was the women's and the men's. It was separate. That mm-hmm. was true.
So, during your time here, were you involved in any of the strikes that were?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Well, we went out on strike. Gosh, what was I? Can't think of the year. That's part of the aging process, I think.
That's fine.
But anyways, we went out on strike, and then I did come here at the hall and worked on the phone for a couple of days that I picketed at the gates. When I went back, got called back to work after the strike was over, I was called to the office. They said I was picketing the wrong place. It wasn't me. They had me mixed up with someone else. And I proved it because I was at the union hall working that time. And that really shook them up because they were swearing that I was out in front picketing. And so that was quite an experience. But I never had much trouble picketing. I mean, they never bothered. It seemed like whatever shift I had or whatever I had to do, I never was bothered that much. I never had. I'm sure some of them got people going by and cussing them and, you know, misusing them, you know. But I never had that.
Do you remember any of the things that you went on strike for?
Well, we went on strike for, number one, we went on strike for better working conditions. They felt like we weren't. They were pushing too hard to want more production, you know. And another thing, they wanted to take away breaks several times. And then they went on strike for, of course, I'm sure this was money, too. I never had the green gene. I was so tickled to death. I apparently was one of the, there's some more like me, but I never, because I was so enthralled with having a job, a good job. And I limited my education; it's very limited. Mm-hmm. I thought, "Oh my goodness, make that kind of money. I tell you, I was just, you know, you couldn't get a job like that anyplace else unless you had a good education.
So may I ask you, what type of education did you have?
I went through eighth grade, and then I had to get out and work when I was at home. And then I got so fed up with being Miss Jews because I couldn't mix in with the Jewish family, Jewish culture, because we moved to my mother figured I was getting old enough that I'd be getting married or sometime, and I had to be in with the Jewish people, you know. And so I left home. I left home at 16. And I went to the United States. I hitchhiked to the United States. And I got a job in the restaurant there and worked. You know, that's the only thing I had first. And then, of course, the first man come along, so good to me and everything, and married him. There you are, you know. And I was just a young punk. Didn't even know, wasn't right behind the ears even. Mm-hmm. But I was all by myself.
Mm-hmm. Was being Jewish an issue for you when you came to the States?
No. But I've never really forced it out too much because I didn't want it. I had so much when I was younger that I couldn't handle it. The stress was that. So it just really, it was, but it, I'm sure it is in times and places. I'm sure it happens here in this country, but I've been blessed. I'll tell you, God's been certainly good to me. He's taken care of me since I was born.
We're going to take a break. Just one second. We're going to take a break for this one. We make a novel. So, going back into the factory again, as far as the supervisors, what were they like?
The ones I came in contact always treated me good. Mm-hmm. But I think part of it was they always told me that I always tried to do a good job. I'm not bragging myself, I hate to, but it was true, because I really did try.
Now, I know you spoke about drink water, but you didn't particularly care for the person above
them? The plant manager. Mm-hmm. When he come around, I hate to say this, but he spit on the floor right in the sewing room. Didn't make any difference. Just, he was a tobacco chewer, so he spit, you know. Go along, just spit. Just didn't even think of carrying a can along with him or spitting a cloth or anything, but on the floor, and that was terrible. Here we are putting our stuff on the floor that we sold. It's going to go on cushions and seats and stuff.
So he was just...
He was mean-looking even. He had an air about him that I would hate to tangle with him. Really. He had an air about him. He just looked very fierce even. And I don't know personally. I didn't have any personal contact with him. He stood behind me and beside me watching me work, and it made me nervous because I knew he was the plant manager.
So upper management came out on the floor a lot back then?
Not a lot. But drink water. Now, he would come around a lot, but this plant manager didn't. Mm-hmm.
Now, how was your immediate supervisor?
Oh, I've never had any trouble with him. Mm-hmm. Never. I've never had trouble with him. Oh, gosh, he was the nicest guy, the first one in the sewing room. I can't think of his name, too. And Massick, there was another one that was nice. Massick was underneath this other one. I can't remember. Massick, I can remember his name, because he was in cut and sew room in the building 15. He was just over that part there. Massick, I can't think of his first name. He was nice. I never had much trouble with any of the foremen. Really, I didn't. I think it's because I stayed in my own business. That was the best thing for me to do, in my consideration, you know, with my family and everything. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to get fired. I didn't want to get laid off. Mm-hmm. So I really stayed by myself.
Now, how did the community look at women who worked in the plant?
Outside the plant, people thought that women that worked in the plant were loose women. But a lot of them did. They went across to Harry's Bar and drank. A lot of them met their husbands there and drank. I'm not saying all, just with everybody else, but that was a fact. I mean, that was well known, and that's why I stayed to myself, pretty much. Mm.
Because you were a married woman?
Well, I was married, and I had a family, and I wanted my job, and I didn't want to get into trouble.
Mm. So would you think that oftentimes that the community had the wrong impression of what factory workers were?
Yes, definitely, yes. Because few of them showed it that way. And what they see, you know, they see him going out across the street to Harry's Bar. You know, there are a lot of people, there's a community of people live all around it, you know. Mm-hmm. And it just, it was sad. It was sad.
Now, did many of your coworkers, how did you get to work? Did you carpool?
I drive. Well, at first, my father and I rode with my father-in-law. Till he retired, and then I had to drive. And then I had to learn to drive. I never learned to drive till I was 33, I think it was.
I think you were 33.
And I rode to work with my father. I just lived a short distance from me. And so he's the one that actually helped get him the first place, because he went down and talked to Tommy Burns, I guess he must have not done the hiring, and he must have talked to me. He knew me, you know, and Tommy Burns liked everybody. And my father-in-law was kind of a kibitzer, and he knew Tommy real well. So he asked him, I guess, if I get in. And Tommy said, bring her in. Well, I went in, and he hired her.
So with working in there, and you worked in the sewing room, and then after the cut and sew room went away, where did you go to then?
Well, then they took me into they called it the cushion room. Mm-hmm. To assemble a cushion backs and seats. And that was really tough, but the people there did not want to stay. I mean, they didn't welcome people come in because they were going to be losing their jobs. They didn't want replacements, and I can't blame them. So I didn't feel bad when I washed out. They wouldn't show me all the details of how to do it the right way and everything.
So you were unable to work there?
So no, they laid me off.
And how long were you laid off
for? I laid off about 6 months. Mm.
So, and when you came back in, you came into?
Came into the sewing room.
And you went to?
No, it wasn't the sewing room then. Came into paint.
That's you went into the paint after that.
Because cut and sew was eliminated. That's why I got laid off.
And so when you went to paint, what did you do in paint?
Well, I started out spraying deadener. And let's see, what else did I do? Mostly painting. I did everything.
So now what part of the car were you putting the deadener on?
In the trunks. So then there'd be carpets and stuff would be put on top of this deadener. That was to deaden noise down, I think, from pebbles and stones, I guess, hitting the bottom of the car.
So now when you went into the paint department, was that particular department mostly women, or at that point did you become integrated with the men?
It was mostly women.
In the paint department, mm-hmm. It was still mostly women.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, and so now when you worked in there and you said about production and getting production, how many jobs did you guys build back then around about? Do you remember?
I'm trying to think. I must have known them, but I really have no idea at that time. Mm-hmm. There must be records someplace.
Absolutely don't remember. That's fine. What do you remember about breaks?
About what?
About the breaks, about your lunches and your breaks.
Oh,
what did
I
you
see.
Do for lunches
well,
and breaks?
Well, we had this break. We had a break in the morning and the afternoon. It was 6 minutes. The line stopped, and that was... It really relieved your mind. That was really an important thing because your mind has a rest. It doesn't see the car going. Because we used to go outside. Of course, they had a smoking area in that then, and the people go out there and smoke. And then I took up smoking. And I went out there just to relax, get away from that constant noise. Because when the cars went into the ovens and they went through the different processes, painting that, they had to go through an oven to heat, dry the bodies off. It was very noisy. It was just a noisy. The tracks, they made a lot of noise. I suppose it's noisy in there now. I don't know. I haven't been in the plant since. But they were very noisy, and it was hot. Very hot.
So they had designating smoking areas for
yes,
you?
Yes.
And that was because it was in the smoking department, or was it the plant rule in
general? I think it was plant-wide because of the fact of... the material and stuff around if they catch fire, smoking, mm-hmm. You know, if they had that.
So initially in the 40s, you were allowed to smoke inside the plant. So what did something...
We had lunch hour. Now, we stopped for lunch. They stopped the lines for lunch. I think different areas stop at certain times. I mean, body shop is different because we had to keep the lines running all the time. I guess they had a stock of something up or of bodies or something. But anyways... We had lunch, and we had 42 minutes, if I'm not mistaken. 42 minutes was our lunch time. At that time, I think at the end, I think we only had a half hour. Is it a half hour now? Yeah, and then it got down to a half hour. But it used to be 42 minutes.
So what type of things, I know some people went to Harry's, but what are some of the other things people did back then?
They had a cafeteria. You could go up the cafeteria, but most people brought their lunch. In fact, I got acquainted with one of the ladies real nice, and she was staying to herself pretty much. And we used to go out and sit in this one place and have our lunch. We discussed the issues of the world and just solve them for them. We had a good time.
So what are some of the big events that happened in the changing of Fisher Body that you remember?
Well, the big event was when I got laid off and I didn't know if I ever get back in the job again. That was when the cut and sew went out. See, we could have went there, but I couldn't because I couldn't move to Grand Rapids because of my family. Mm-hmm. You know, I couldn't.
So what about as we fast forward, coming forward, I mean, was there any particular other plant managers that you remember well?
Step. His last name must have started with
Horson.
He asked me to go on a relief job. They need the relief person out in what they call Bonnerite, where they dip the bodies and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't know. He said, I wish you would try it. And because he says, you're here all the time. We never have to look for you to place you. He said, and that our relief person replaces anybody that's off. You know, you step in to take someone else's job. Mm-hmm. So I did that. And they said, gee whiz. He said, I was pretty good because I was regular. That was it. And I always tried to do the best job I could. I tried to cover up if there was mistakes. And sometimes you get something that doesn't fit good, you know, and right and everything. So the next guy's got to work around it. Maybe it's part of what you have to do, see? So you have to kind of cover that up, you know, and fix it up. And that's what I always tried to do the best job I could. That was all. That was my nature.
So when you worked here, did you get involved in any of the women auxiliaries or things that later became the women's committees or anything like that?
I went into the women's committee for a while. But it interfered with me at home. I just couldn't. I had children who were going to sports and stuff like that. I just couldn't take the time to do that. Mm-hmm. But then after I retired, I was chairperson of the retirees for a while. But then it was just too time consuming. I mean, it just really was. So I just phased out what I wanted. I promoted other people for those jobs. And then they tried to get me into it again, but I said no, it wasn't for me because I just didn't have the time or the energy for that. I just had other interests.
Now, I understand. Now, do you have any other family that work here?
Yes, I have. Well, I've got a granddaughter, and I have a son that just retired here a couple years ago. And in fact, my father-in-law worked here. That's the one that got me in. He worked here. So there was quite a few of us McNairys.
Can you tell us their names?
Well, my father-in-law was Sherman McNary. My son's name is Shane McNary. In fact, he just retired a couple years ago. A lot of people know him now. In fact, we can't go shopping anyplace because everybody knows him. And, of course, he got around. He was a repairman, kind of. He was an electrician. And then I have Connie Swander, who was financial secretary the last session here. So that, and then myself.
And Connie's your granddaughter, right?
Yeah, Connie's my granddaughter, yeah.
Okay. So, I understand, because I know Connie. She told me that you had a pretty good experience in going to, I think it was Japan?
Oh, I went to China.
China. Can you tell us about why you went to China and what you did there?
First of all, I was approached to go to China because I was a factory woman, a female, and they wanted. All they would get was these doctors and nurses, what they call the educated, you know, people. And I said, I couldn't afford to do that. You know, I just sort of said, I couldn't afford to do that. And they said, we'll help raise the funds for it. And I asked my family, they said, oh, my goodness, go, who else got an opportunity? They said, president just been there for 77, you know, and I thought, oh, Lord have mercy. So I thought, well, okay, I'll try it. So I went, and the union helped support it, too.
And what year was that?
77, I think. 77, I think.
So what did you do when you went over there? Did you go over there with a group?
Yes, it was a group, the U.S.-China People's Friendship Association. And they raised funds for me, and we had things at the Union Hall. They helped raise funds for me, and in fact, it cost me very little. And it ordinarily would have cost around that time, I think, $3,000 or $4,000.
How long were you there?
21 days.
21 days.
Yes.
Wow. And so what did you do when you went there?
We went to different places, and I told them I wouldn't go unless I went to a car factory. Oh, boy, was that an experience. That's a car factory. If they had one car go through there in an hour and a half, that would be a miracle. I'm telling you, it was so slow. And people were just working their buns off, trying to do the jobs. They must have had too much to do. That's all there was to it. But it took about an hour and a half before that job ever got through to go out the door. Because I tell you, it was just, oh, it's so slow. But it was nothing like our cars, no. Our manufacturing was so far advanced to that. Then I went to Cloisonne factory and different places. But they wouldn't take me to, they wouldn't allow us to go to certain, only to certain places. Because I'm sure there's places that we went to that wasn't very nice, but there was other places that were worse that they wouldn't let us go to. They were pretty, well, the toilets just stood up, built the toilet, there was no modern facilities. And that was in big cities, I mean main cities. Beijing was one of the biggest cities there, you know. And so I just, but it just really was very poor, very. I used to get up in the morning at about 5 o'clock and go out walking the streets because I wanted to see the people. I wanted to see how they react. I wanted to see their homes and that. And I walked just around the neighborhood close. Boy, I'll tell you, I caused a disturbance one time. They ride bicycles like it was just umpteen zillion. You couldn't see through the bicycles. And they all looked at me because, of course, I'm a white person and I wasn't American, you know. And they all looked at me and they turned around and ran bikes and, gee, I don't know how many fell off their bikes. what a catastrophe. And boy, the police come along and said, please move along, lady. And so I moved along. Oh, it was really something. Then I seen the people get go to the little truck to get their milk. They had a little bitty, about a half a pint, little bottle for milk. It was amazing. And then they do brush their teeth over there, but they go out in the backyard like you do in the country and brush your teeth and spit on the ground. It was really amazing. It was really unique. And one time there was a group of us walked in the evening, and there was a watermelon truck. And we all said, I said, wouldn't you like a watermelon? No one had money. I had money with me. I said, okay. I said, we'll buy a watermelon, and we'll see if they'll cut it for us. We'll eat it. So I had money with me, and I didn't know how I couldn't. They didn't know English for beans, and I handed out some money out in my life. So they took me. I don't remember just how much it cost, and they cut it for us. And I tried to give a little girl a piece of it. They would not let her have it. I don't know why, because they seen a hole and everything there. But I just, whether she was shy and their family or whatever, but they didn't let her have it. But it was an experience. We were trying to demonstrate. We wanted one and wanted them to cut it, and it was just really charades, I guess you'd call it. It was really an experience. But it was a good experience, really. I was glad I went. But I really, today would be so much different, I'm sure. It's modernized and everything, but it was so primitive. But every window had some box of greenery. There was not a window that didn't have some box of greenery growing. If it was vegetables or just green leaves, it was something green. They just were growing something. Another thing, their coal mine was open. You could see their coal mine was just open, and then you see the vegetation, the gardens. It was like terraced all the way up the hill. Terrace, and then that space, and then terrace. And it wasn't a wide terrace, and they were growing the vegetables, and that was right there. That was an experience to see. And then the biggest impression for me of that car assembly was really something. I don't know if it ever got through in an hour and a half, but the thing would never, I think.
So they're working, how would you say their working conditions were compared to ours? I know they were working, so what were the conditions?
I know, but
like?
They're very primitive, and they worked a lot harder
than what we did.
They had to work a lot harder. They didn't have time for nothing. They didn't even have time to wipe their nose. At least we could wipe our nose, even if it's one hand, we could do something, but they couldn't. I'm telling you, that was something. So, but of course it would be different, I'm sure.
So now, you said when you came here, you said that you retired in 79?
Yep.
And so...
I got my 30 years out. We fought for 30 years and out. For a long time. And I had my 30 years. And I figured I wasn't rich, but I wasn't going to get rich, and I'll be able to get by on my pension, because I live simple, and I still live simple. Mm-hmm. Yet I've managed. I can take care of myself. I don't have to have anybody else support me. Unless the whole country goes to pot, then my money will go down the tube, too.
So now you said you fought for 30 and out. So was the 30 and out part of one of your strikes,
yes,
that you did?
Yes, one of our strike benefit of times. I was on two strikes, I think. Two or three strikes.
What was the longest strike you remember being on?
Longest strike was only about a month, I think it was. To my recollection. I could be wrong on that.
Now, did many of the people that you struck with during the 30 and out, did they take advantage of it too, or did they stay longer?
I don't know if they did or not. I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did, because I know a lot of people did, because I know particularly, I have to say, skilled trades. Now, I'm not knocking it because I have a son and a daughter, a granddaughter, and that. But at that time, it seemed like they could, I've seen them stand around and talk to their girlfriends. I say girlfriends because they were the same ones all the time, and they're spending the time there, you know, and they weren't doing anything, you know. Yeah. But when the line stopped, when there was a breakdown, boy, everything, they were walking, they were moving, they were just everywhere. Those repairmen were out there working their buns off, too. But when everything was running smooth, it seemed like they didn't have that much to do. But right now, I don't think that condition still exists.
So, if you had to be asked, what was your fondest thing that you remember about working in the plant, what would that be?
I had a couple of friends there. I really, really. Ann Muzzy, her name was Leifa Muzzy. She worked the Fisher Body. And Mary, it's Benedict now. No, Kimball now. It was Benedict. She, her and I got real close with them. Ann Muzzy came to be a neighbor of mine. And Mary Kimball, I met in the shop only. But we kept up a friendship. I try to see her now, but she has Alzheimer's, and it's kind of hard to communicate with, so it's difficult. Of course, she lives in Lake Odessa, and I don't drive anymore, so getting over there is a little bit of a problem. Mm-hmm. But everybody knew Mary was a very, very nice lady. Mm-hmm. And Muzzy was, too, as far as that goes. She was a different personality, different person.
So what would you say made because Fisher Body's had been here in Lansing for a long time.
A long time.
What would you say was the key to their success here?
Key to what, their success?
Mm-hmm.
They built a quality car, because I think most of the people tried to do the best they could. And I think that the engineering, I think, was good. I think it was better at that time. And I don't know whether I think education sometimes has gotten in the way, because I think right now, I think General Motors has let us down. They didn't build any car to compete with any of the lower gas-consuming cars on the market. And this has been going on for years. If people are buying them, they wanted them. We showed them the technology. They brought them over, showed us, took them to our plant and showed these foreign countries how to assemble these cars and do it. And I feel bad about that. In fact, there was an experience I had when I was metal cleaning. I seen, we were always speak, buy American. What does this roof say? Japan. Steel was in Japan. I said, what are we doing with this steel chimney? And that was really hot to buy American. So I called the committee man. I said, do you know this metal's from Japan? He said, yes. And he said, there's nothing you can do about it. I said, what do you mean? So I had, his name is on the tip of my tongue, top committee come. And he said, they have an agreement that we're going to show them, and they agreed we buy this metal. So I thought right then, the union let us down. They shouldn't be forcing us to try to buy American if we can't do it. And we're working on this Japanese metal. Nothing being done about it. We have our own steel here, our steel factories we did have. Where are they now? They're long gone, aren't they?
And that's, when you say that they're long gone now, back in the 40s, what was industry like here?
Well, I think it was pretty good. I think everybody was pretty much, the people were working. If they wanted a job, I think they could get one. Mm-hmm. But today, there's not the jobs that we used to have.
Yeah, oftentimes I've heard people say, well, there was Oldsmobile, and there was Motor Wheel, and there was Diamond Rio.
Yes, there was. Yeah, there was
and
other
the
places.
And then the job forges here.
But see, those disappeared. They that's true. Those were here. And yet they went out of business. Why did they? Drop forges is metal and stuff, you know. There you go. Mm. We cut our own throats in a lot of ways. I have to say this. The union let us down in a lot of ways. I maybe can't print that, but I'll tell you, I felt they had. We should have had a car. We should have had engineers that was educated enough to keep and compete, have a car better than the competition that we have to face. Mm-hmm. What have we got today? General Lewis is in trouble.
So if you were to give a message to the young workers of today, to the young union members of today, what would that message be?
Get in there with the union and see what you can do to get these things, the union, stronger. The union has to, because we have to have a voice, but we can't. We cannot cater to management like we have. We've let them get above us. Mm. I hate to say this, maybe can't print this or do this, say this, but I think they got their hands in each other's pocket too much.
All right.
I don't know whether you can say that or not, but I'm saying it.
Ready? You talked about when you came in, you made $1.79 in the cushion, in the cushion room. From the time you hired in until the time you retired, could you talk about or let us know what you felt about General Motors and the life it afforded you and your family?
I'll tell you, General Motors has been very, very good to me. Very good to me. I cannot complain. The only thing is, I wish they'd have taken some of the raises and put it into our benefits to be sure the people that retire, their benefits won't be messed up.
So the benefits that you have now as a retiree, you would have liked to have had just a little more?
No, I'm satisfied, but I'm afraid they're going to mess it up some more. Because they've messed it up a little. I can manage all right with it now. But I'm afraid, because other companies have cut out insurances and everything, and I'm very afraid of that.
You said you were making $1.79 when you hired in. How much were you making when you retired?
You know, I can't really remember the exact amount, but it's got to be. I wish I had kept track of it, and I should have kept my check stubs, but I didn't. It's got to be an idea what.
The $7.95?
It's what?
The $7.95 song?
Oh, it's more than that. It's more than that.
I
think so.
Within the 1970s.
Of course, you know, I think one thing, though, we did work a lot of overtime. We worked Saturday, so that made your wages come up, mm-hmm. really. I mean, your check got a lot bigger.
So what type of hours did you work back then?
Oh, at first we only could work 40 hours. Then it got to where we could work 54 hours. Then it got to where we didn't want to work as much. That was all issues of the union. Union has been good. but they've been lax in some of the things that needed to be taken care of too, you know, really.
So did
because a lot of people want just money now when there's a contract going up, you know, and so they want more money. They don't stop and think when they retire. You want to be sure that that's going to be there when you get done.
So, being a woman back then, did you also have to work some of those 12-hour days or those 13-hour days?
I never had to work that long, but I did work 7 days a week a couple of times. In fact, I had to come in one time on, was it a Sunday? A Sunday. Worked 4 hours because a Buick needed some work, and we did some work for them in the sewing room. That was in cut and sew. And I was shocked when they brought us in on Sunday. I mean, that was, and there was, most of them came in.
There was nothing you could do about it? Could you refuse
We could refuse, but it just didn't look good. I mean, I didn't want to ever have a black mark against me. So I would do that. Mm-hmm. I would work.
So you were just a model employee?
I think I was. Well, the day before I retired, mm-hmm. Weathor come up to me and wanted me to stay.
Who did?
Weathor. He come up and got me personally.
And he was
talk to me. He's a plant manager.
He was the plant manager then.
Yeah. And he come up, he says, won't you please stay? He asked me, won't you please stay? I said, no, if I died today, you'd have someone take my place tomorrow. He said, I can't deny that. But he says, we don't have the people as loyal and faithful as you've been. So I felt really good about that.
So now, during your work time, did you take vacations?
Yeah, we had vacations. I always took my vacation when the plant was down for model changeover. Mm-hmm. I always took my kids. Ann Muzzy, her brother, had a cottage at Houghton Lake, and we always rented that. She took her 3 kids, and I had my 3 kids, and I had a car, and I drove it up there, and kids were always hanging out the window. They had a good time up there.
So the model change was when it was from 1 year to the next. Yeah. And how long were those model changes?
2 to 3 weeks.
2 to 3 weeks?
And then we still got sub money, you know, we got sub pay. And I always got my vacation check, you know. Like, I don't know how you guys get them now. Once a year, mm-hmm. you get them, and we used to get them, and it depends where, what year you, or what month, time yeah. of the month you're hired in.
Hired in either in the summer or the winter, depending on when you got.
So I was very fortunate. I got my in the summer, and we used that for our vacation.
When you were in the cut and sew, and most of the ladies weren't used to working Sundays, but was that the case with the men in production within the shop? Did they work Saturdays and Sundays all the time? Or
That was a very unusual Sunday. That was only one Sunday that I ever remember working on a Sunday. Saturdays got to be quite frequent. They got to General Motors, their car was a good car. We were making a good product, and they were selling.
But I guess I'm asking is about the other people, the men.
I think most of the people
were
there.
And the men in the shop.
Yeah,
they were
well,
allowed.
Well, I was around too much men, many men.
But they were allowed to work.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. They had as much privilege. The only thing is that was cut, and so I don't think that the men were in that Sunday. Of course, nowadays, I don't know if they even have to come in on some. Well, I mean, skilled trades, don't they have to have somebody on the, what is it?
In the powerhouse. I think.
Powerhouse.
Yes. But now, I was going to say, it's always about the women because of when you carried in, the predominant number of them worked in the cut and sew room, and then the cushion room, and then the paint department.
I worked around mostly women.
And then that's primarily, so those were the departments where most of the women were all. Would you say?
I do think there was women scattered through the plant, but not that was predominant.
I mean,
these other
how
places.
Many women would you guess probably worked here back then?
Must be around 400 or 500.
400 or 500.
I think so.
So you
saw throughout
the
whole plant. I mean, I think there was. But now I don't know what happened. Oh, I did. Gosh, you got women working in tinsmith. Even I mean, Faye.
So there were no women's skilled trades women when you came in, I'm sure.
No, there wasn't. But there finally was before I left, though. Yes, there was. In fact, I think there was one woman that got to be when she had one of the departments. I think one of the women had to be head of one of the departments. I can't remember.
So there were, most of the supervisors were men then?
Men supervisors.
From 1948 until what time do you think it got much better for you? Because if I'm not mistaken, there were times when the auto industry weren't selling cars that they would lay people off. Am I mistaken here?
I think it depended on your seniority, the layoffs. See,
so you,
I wasn't laid off very much.
But it did get lean when they weren't selling cars,
well,
right?
Yeah, you always work just 8 hours, like 40 hours, 5 days a week, eight hours a day. The only time if something went down with the line or something, we got homework, sent home early because they had to stop the line for something happened, major down in the body shop or something. So well, the line stopped.
Was there ever a time that it got to where it was negotiated for you to be able to get supplemental pay when the lean times came?
That's happened, yeah. That happened when we started getting out.
Do you remember when that happened?
I don't know just what year that was either. And if we had the short work week and it wasn't our fault, and what was the company's fault, they had to make up a certain percentage. Yeah, I don't know just when that was either. I'll be honest with you. I should have kept track of all that. I'll tell you one thing. When you're working on the line, you don't use your head too much. You do it automatically. And that's boring. I think they need to change people around more often so they have to know the different job. See, when I was relief person, I got around to do a different job. That's why I could take that relief job easier, see?
You lived through the Depression, didn't you?
1920, do you think I was living through the Depression?
Yes, I do. Could you talk about the Depression and what you felt the economy was?
I'll be honest and tell you, I can't tell you that I wasn't a privilege because my mother was an unusual woman. Unusual. We walked miles to go to an indoor like market where they had vendors outside the houses and the streets, and that was in an area. And we walked quite a few miles to get there. And we'd come home with both our arms full of bags, you know, big heavy bags. And we used to go late at night on the weekend because Jewish people, of course, there's Sunday, they just were closed, you know, they closed Friday and then Saturday and Sunday. So anyway, we go, and, you know, they, instead of buying the first-class oranges, my mother bought ones they were going to discard. We bought them. She took them home. I'd go to school maybe on Monday, and I'd take a half an orange that had been cut off. The other kids would look at me. I'm eating an orange. They said, "Where'd you get that?" I said, "My mom." Never thinking that I was underprivileged, or I was privileged. Mm-hmm. They were underprivileged. We lived in a poor neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And it was, and my mother was just an unusual woman. She could take a little of nothing and make a good meal out of it. Boy, little of nothing. And probably your brothers could do the same.
Oh, certainly. You know,
and that's the way it is. But my mother was really an unusual, and she never married again. She was still a young enough woman.
What was the first automobile you bought, Betty?
Pardon?
What was the first car you bought?
First car I bought, General Motors. I've never bought any car but a General Motors car.
What kind, Betty?
It was a Buick. It was a second-hand car. It was a Buick. In fact, my husband, he's the one that picked it out, of course, you know. It wasn't that my choice. I didn't want a convertible. Who the heck would want it? But a man would want a convertible. Oh, God almighty. And that's what I learned to drive. That was my very first, that was when I was 33. Oh, Lord, have mercy. Learning to drive was something else. So.
When you finally got to where you could pick your own car, what type did you pick, Betty?
I just get an Oldsmobile. That's all. That's all I ever bought was an Oldsmobile.
Mm-hmm. How did you feel about it when the Oldsmobile How did you feel when Uncle Bill became non-existent anymore? Is it that the
vehicle? It's hurting. It's hurting. I feel bad. It just hurts my heart. It hurts my heart. Mm. And we could still be right up there. I hate to think of this plan. I'll be here. Tough. Oldenville is mighty good to me. Mighty good. Thank the good Lord sent me here. And they hired me. And I took care of my family. It's tough. Tough to think a kid's not going to be here no more. You'll always be Fisher Body to me. This plant will always be Fisher Body till the day I die.
No, because when you retired, it was still Fisher Body, right? Okay. And then it became, the name changes came later.
Just was Fisher Body.
Thank you, Ben.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, Betty, we want to thank you very much for coming.
Yeah. We've talked a little bit about the plant, Betty. Can you tell us a little bit about the UAW Local 602? Do you remember, has it always been here? Or were you here when this facility was being built here at 2510 West Michigan?
It wasn't here when I first. In fact, when I went to work, I joined the union just the day I even hired in there. They said you didn't have to join right away. I said, I'll contribute right now because I just believed in unions, and I still do. But I do think they have their bad points, too. And that's all. That's everybody. But this union hall wasn't here then. Like you said, it was St. Joe. In fact, we used to pay our dues at a different place, too. We used to go someplace and I remember a cage. We used to pay our union dues there.
So you had to go to a cage and pay your dues? Well, it wasn't automatic out of your check?
It wasn't, no. And then finally it got to where it was out of our check. It wasn't. We had to go pay our union dues.
You had to go and pay your union dues.
I had to pay union dues.
So how did you guys get the building here at 2510?
I really don't know how that came about, but anyways, finally got, because I wasn't attending, I couldn't, I had a small family, I had to be home, had to do the washing, the ironing, the house, whole household run, had to do it on the weekends, because I was tired from the shop. But I just, the one was here, and then when I got to where I started coming to union meetings and everything, I just was blessed. I was glad they had the union. I mean, the union's been good to me. I can't deny it. But I do feel like it could go back to where it used to be, because it's, right now I think it's too much. Well, I'll tell you, I think Walter Reuther would turn over in his grave if he knew everything that was going on right now with the union, because he was a union leader.
Did you ever attend any of the rallies and anything when they were on strike? Or did you see Walter?
I used to go to some of them, like the nurses and that. I used to go to some of them when they were striking. But I couldn't very well because I still had family, you know, to take care of and things. And I lived out in the country and all that. It just was tough.
Was there a nice attendance when it came to the union meetings that you went to? Were there several people or few people?
There wasn't as many as there is now, I'm sure, but right now I feel like so many of them, it's just because a lot of them, they have to be. That's an awful thing to say, but a lot of them, they have to be here because of the positions that they hold. But I do think that there's got to be a way of getting more unionism into the people. There really is, because without a union, if they stop and think, without a union, where would we be?
When you came in, did they have any kind of union initiation? Did you have any kind of union education when you came in, other than knowing that was the right thing to do?
No, we just had to come and get sworn in. No, that was when I became president or chairperson. but just paid dues. And in fact, they used to come around and collect them even sometimes in the shop.
How did they get information to you about the union back then? Like if the union was doing something, if they're getting ready to go on strike, how did you guys get information on that stuff before going online?
I think there was some way of posting and having a meeting. And then word of mouth in the shop. I mean, if anything happened, boy, it got around that shop. I'm sure right now, if anything happens at that shop in half hour, the whole thing knows, the whole plant knows. You know, it's just the way it is. But I can't remember reading anything, but I must have read something. We used to have a bulletin board, but I'm sure they didn't allow that stuff up in on the bulletin boards. That's what I was trying to figure. There's got to be some way.
So when you guys went on strike, did you just walk out?
Oh, it's word got around.
You guys just...
And they told us what time to go, and that's it. And we went.
We just dropped your guns and went.
Just dropped and went right then. Absolutely. Walked out bravely, and that was it. No problem, as far as I was concerned.
Okay. Thank you.
I really, really... I got to say that the union's been good to me. I have to say it, but General Motors has been good to me. The people that, you know, the people that worked here, the foremen, and I had a good experience here. I really did. I got to say that, and not everybody says that. Mm-hmm. But I think it's your own attitude lots of times, what you make out of your own situation. I needed the job, and I was so thankful to have it. So I wanted to be worth it. Mm-hmm. That's the way I feel, you know. That's the way I feel about life. God must think I got something more to do because he's keeping me around. I've already lived my limit.
Well, we're glad you're still here to share the story. Thanks.
You're welcome. You're very welcome.
All right.